Today's episode of the Mind Sculptors podcast is sponsored by TCG Player, your source for all your trading card game needs. Use our link in the description the next time you get your cards to help support the show. Today's episode is also made possible by our Patreon subscribers. If you want to support the show directly, head over to patreon.com/themindsculptors and you can become part of the Sculpty family today. Or if you don't want to do any of that, leave a like and comment on YouTube or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts as an offering to Algorithm Jesus.
Welcome everybody to the Mind Sculptors podcast. I am your one half of the Sculpty Boys, Callahan, and joining me is they call him Dr. Pooh. Good morning, how are you?
Hi, Cal. No, Cal is not bullying me. I put that as my name in Riverside.
They call him Dr. Pooh.
What song are you doing?
Dr. Worm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what that is.
You do.
Anytime I hear someone go, "They call me," all I can think of is Pumbaa. What?
You've never heard Dr. Worm?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Cal, we got a tight 90. You can't spend that
much. I know. I just I'm not gonna play it for you. It's a great They Might Be Giants song.
Oh, sure.
And I just, man, I've never felt you so far from our father's embrace before. Like I can
wow. that got surprisingly religious very quickly.
So over the weekend, we went out to some tournaments.
Hell yeah.
You played up at SCG Hartford. I played Hartford. Up at the Top Deckers. What was it? Their little 1,000 subscriber tournament that capped at 64. Like, it was awesome. Cool. Was a hell of a good time. Nikki and Bailey did a great job putting that on. You should go subscribe to them.
I have never heard of them, but that's cool.
Yeah, you should absolutely go subscribe to them. The Top Deckers are cool peeps, and they are part of that Cincinnati crew that I'll be joining here in a few months.
I know, it's exciting. You're moving.
We're moving to Cincinnati in July. Ooh. But I did horribly this weekend. Actually, I think I did okay given the fact that I went last all weekend. Mm-hmm. I went 0-2-2. I feel like I played about as well as I could play given the fact that I was going fourth on Tivit all day. Not like where you want to be.
Literally every game?
Yeah, literally every game. Excuse me, I went third once.
Bro, that's crazy.
Yeah, it fucking sucked. Listen, Zane, I know we had beef. Can you unfuck the algorithm for me?
That's so funny.
We're cool now. But yeah, so I didn't have a great weekend. You, on the other hand, went 4-1 in Swiss up at Hartford with a fucking brew, dude. I'm so proud of you.
I know. I literally I cannot believe that this is the deck that I have my best one day record on during the Swiss. So I played Itali Primal Conqueror. I went 4-1, which is not a record I thought I was going to end the day with on Itali Primal Conqueror. Crazy part is my only loss during the Swiss too. I had win on board, but I got one over the top of by Sisse. Like, I was mid comboing. So it was very close to 5-0 that day.
It do be that way.
And then we lost in the semis to I played Itali, flipped into Kinnan's Trinisphere, played the Trinisphere and Rocco, who had Molt to 4, had exactly enough mana to play Rocco for Dockside for 4, and had Food Chain in hand to win. Turn 2
fucking
on a
Molt
of 4. I was like, what? I guess I'm out.
Yeah, you got it. You got it, champ.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I know, it's crazy. I was in Pod Jorman too, and he showed me a Force of Negation and a Force of Vigor in hand too. And he was like, yeah, dude, I didn't think I needed to counter the Trinisphere because it's fine for me, and I had three mana. I didn't expect us to lose to the Multivore Rocko, and I was like, yeah,
that's a reasonable thought. Yeah. we spent a good amount of time like kind of fine tuning that list before you went out, and I was super excited to see like how it would do.
It is so much more fun than the last time I played it. Also, I talked with a couple people who play Tali, and like they gave me a couple of recommendations that came in super clutch. The biggest one was Rionya. That card, actually, Hellkite Courser. Those two both completely changed the game for that deck. Yeah. So Hellkite Courser is a six drop that lets you put your commander into play and then throw it back to the command zone at end step, which might not sound great, but in a deck that's all about cheating your commander into play multiple times, it's perfect. And then Rionya is busted with Atali because you just like cast like three or four spells and then you move to combat. And I think every single time I had Rionya trigger for two or three, anything greater than three, I think I won the game. So you need to play Rionya and two instants or sorceries beforehand, which is not that hard to do in a deck full of rituals, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. Like when people were asking me about the deck, I was just like, guys, the deck is just like mana in bombs. Like that's like the deck.
It's not even bombs necessarily, right? Because like you, the like bombs that you do have just like help you get Atali more, right? Right. But like the payoffs aren't even from your own deck. That's the crazy part, right? Is like if people are locking down and playing a bunch of high card quality cards, right? Like turns out like it got easier as the day went on because I would just like play against really good decks and then just steal their demonic tutors and be like, sure, I'll go grab my food chain, which normally I have zero tutor for us, but like. thanks for playing good cards.
Thanks, guys. No, I'm excited for the inevitable video that I'm gonna have to edit for you about that. So it is a
non-deterministic Dinosaur Storm was not exactly how I thought I would be taking down a good amount of pods that weekend, but hey.
Well, the funny thing is that's the first time you like did well at an SCG event, wasn't it?
No, I've talked to seen multiple SCGs.
Oh, that's right. You did last year. Yeah. It's the first one since Columbus, I think.
Yes, because I topped Baltimore and I topped Columbus.
Yeah. Yep. And we both topped Columbus. I forgot we both topped Columbus. I
think the only one that I've missed on was the one where I wrote Cincinnati. One out.
Yeah. Well, look at you. Doing good with the gruel. I'm sure our good friend will be quite happy about that.
Oh, Surreal?
Yeah. I'm sure Surreal will be super happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to text him about that. Actually, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Be like, well, hey, the dino's real.
So we're here to do a power rankings episode. Mm-hmm. And it is that time of the month again. So, oh my goodness, such a cutie.
Quick interruption there. Just had to no, show
that is
a podcast.
That's kind of a needed interruption.
Yeah.
But last month, or at the beginning of January, literally on the first day of January or second day of January, we had the end of year power rankings that we did for the whole year. And now we're doing it for the beginning of the year with January. So we're going to be starting off fresh. There are no power rankings right now. It is only the January, or there's nothing on the board right now.
Hashtag so new year, new us.
New year, new us. We're going out to Planet Fitness. We're doing the whole thing. And so let's go ahead and start it off with honorable mentions. Ian, what is your honorable mention for January?
Yeah, I had to throw out a shout out to Magda because for some reason that deck did really, really well in January with like 11 showings and almost five of those 11 converting to top 16, which is like
nuts.
I'm like, what just happened? That is not numbers that I was expecting from Magda, but
15 tournaments entered. And six top 16s. It's a 40% top 16 percentage.
What dates did you filter from? I have it from the 1st of January.
I have it from the 1st of January as well. Again, remember that I do 50 and up.
Oh, you do 50 and up. Yep. Yeah.
But we got 15 in here.
The numbers changed so much when I did that.
Yep, they do. So Magda had a really good month. And it's kind of one of those decks, right, that just pops up every now and gets hot for a little bit and then
absolutely
fades away.
Magd is a weird deck. I mean, honestly, like, it is one of those decks that is just like, I have no idea how it's doing so well in the Bowmasters meta, but
it is.
But it is. It's doing it.
Yeah.
I will say there's a certain, like, well-equipped Magda pilots can work around Bowmasters very well, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I scared the shit out of the cat. She was like...
That's hilarious.
Yeah. All right, we can cut around that. Well-equipped Magda pilots can definitely play around Bowmasters, right? There's a lot of, like, quasi-haste enablers, or at least, like, hasty tappers, right? Like, mm-hmm. vehicles and things like that. So, like, a competent Magda pilot can get around Bowmasters, but it's still kind of amazing to see that the deck is doing this well in January. So, I mean, I don't really have much to say about Magda. Nothing's really changed for the deck. Like, they've got a Phyrexian portal now, like...
And that's, like, a year old at this point?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's... Yeah, it's been a minute. My honorable mention for the month of January is Quark and Sakashima coming out. Only had 10 entries for the month, so nothing like crazy, but had a 34% win percentage, took down a tournament, 3 top 16s, 2 top 4s. Like, I mean, good month for Quark and Sakashima. I don't think that makes it all of the sudden like...
A good deck.
A top 10 deck. I think the way I look at Quark and Sakashima is it is exactly the same deck as Giftstorm and Modern.
I think it is a good deck, to be clear. It is just like, it's not a deck that can afford to be a boogeyman, right?
Yep.
Because as soon as people remember it, it becomes a problem, and then they winnow to it, where they just never let the commanders resolve, and then it's not a problem, right? So that's more so what my shorthand was referring to.
One of the things about Quark and Sakashima too is it's very much like Giftstorm and Modern, where like Giftstorm is the type of deck where really it's like you could take that to an event and just like spike it really hard.
Yeah.
But it's never gonna be like a huge percentage of the metagame.
Right.
It's kind of harder to play. And I feel like they play very similarly. They are very similar decks, and
I actually love that comparison. That's like a pretty,
I mean, they feel like a one-to-one comparison, right?
Yeah, like on a lot of levels. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but I think Quark and Sakashima. That's my honorable mention. So it's a deck that had a good month and deserves a little bit of attention. So let's get into this top 10, Ian. Let's start with your number 10. What do you have as your 10th?
Well, Cal, as my number 10, I have the 7-mana queen herself, Atraxa, Grandian Fire. As much as I love Atraxa, I feel like, first of all, she had a dookie month with a 13% conversion rate. So, bad start, Atraxa. She did very well at the SCG, which isn't on here, right? On EDH Top 16, because SCG's been weird about stuff like that lately. And we'll get into that, too. It's been a bad month for Draxa. I think people are just getting how to play around it. I think the amount of people who are like, we've listened to the people who call it the Parasite deck and we haven't let it Parasite and it's been doing worse. And it's like, oh, okay, weird. Now we get it.
Weird how that works, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's still 4-color soup, right? Like, good pilots can still plant an advantage engine and clown on a table, right? But I just feel like, I don't know, like it is still the deck that is like, it's the soup deck that for some reason wants to omit playing Dockside, which is just like, and Breach, right? Which is like, if I'm playing soup, if I'm playing boring card advantage soup, I'm playing some bastardized version of Blue Farm, right? That is just like all the card advantage engines and then the ability to explode with the Dockside, right? Like, I don't know why. Right now, people like, I mean, I've played Atraxa. I have an Atraxa list sleeved up, right? It is just because I like the commander Atraxa. And I feel like that is the incentive for people is like, oh, hey, look at this big thing I can do at the end. Ooh, fun, big Atraxa, cool. Like, but I don't think it does anything right now that's making it stick out as far as like the soup decks of our format, you know?
Yeah. It's in an interesting position. And I'll definitely touch on that a little bit more when I get to inevitably place it. My number 10 for the month is Obnixilus Captive Kingpin. Ob had a weirdly good month, doing like made three top 16s, had a 25% win percentage, like nothing crazy, but it's like showing up enough consistently in these monthly reports that I do, in this sort of, you know, it's like the like bottom of the top 10. It like always kind of hangs in that general area of like the most played decks. It definitely is doing better than a lot of the field is overall, but it is a deck that very much has some of the same issues Rog Psy ends up having in those top 16 spaces, where you get to the top 16 and then people are playing super responsibly and on our better decks and you can't get away with nearly as much.
Yep. Magda saw the same thing with this month too, right? Like it's the same pattern, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I still think it's really good. I think a competent pilot can take it super far, but it is, it again, it, very similar to Rog Psy in that regard. But you know, being Rakdos is kind of rough, but it does it really, really well. So, and current metagame is kind of favorable to it in a way.
Yeah.
So, I have Obnixilus at number 10. Number 9, Ian, what do you have here?
Okay, at number 9, we have my least favorite mid-range deck in the format. We have Dargo Thrasios.
Okay.
people have been like, I don't know why the dialogue on this deck lately has been people asking a lot about it. And I just, my God, it's the most boring mid-range deck in the format for me. I think it's just like, now that Dawnwaker has been updated to fit the current metagame, which I still have to update my primer on, which is my bad. hopefully by the time this is aired, you can hear that. But like the list I took to the top 16, I feel like is doing everything Dargo Thrasios wants to do, but better. I don't think Dargo's explosivity is like really that relevant. I think like the Neoform lines are kind of cute sometimes. I just like, I feel like a lot of the times I see the pilots of this deck just like kind of get away with like this deck, but like has so many contradictions in it. You know what I mean? Like it's an explosive deck. It's a slow deck. It wants to do one thing, wants another thing. Like I just, I don't know, White's really strong. Zerda's strong. Like synergies that are just better with other things that exist in the format are strong. Yeah. Right. So, you know, this might be my hot take of the episode, but I think Dargo Thrasios is just like another one of these decks that is around, is doing fine, is doing things that are like, yeah, you got like Dargo lines, which are kind of cute, and you got the Neoform stuff, right? Like, I just feel like for a very long time, Dargo Thrasios was able to take advantage of the fact that it was better suited in the format compared to something like Dawnmaker. But now that like decks like Dawnmaker and Derevi and stuff like that have like updated, it's just not doing anything better than the other decks. And the card quality issue of having Dargo as opposed to like more colors or a better commander, like, you know, it's just coming up, right?
I mean, so 22% win percentage.
Yeah.
Like it's I think super average. Like, slightly like, below, but
Manila's the person really like still pushing for this deck right now that Freedom's moved off it, and Manila's been doing well with it. He'd be top 16 Boil, right? Like he's a good pilot, but like I think he knows this deck well, and I think if he jumped onto another list he would still be doing well because it's a pilot thing, not a deck thing. I think this deck is, if anything, like all the people I've been coaching on it have been like, yeah, it's been letting me down in this way, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I find with this deck as well too. So yeah. I don't know, and underwhelmed by it frequently.
So that is your number 9. My number 9 for the month of January. This is where I have Najeela the Blade Blossom. I have Najeela a little bit lower, even though Najeela actually had its best month in like a while. Like exceptionally good month overall. 32% top 16 percentage, which is pretty good. That's like right where you want to be. It's on par with Tim the Crom. You know, 28% win percentage, but my big concern with it is that I don't feel super confident in it in the long term, especially with the current build of Najeela. I think that it is very weak to the way the current metagame is, especially with it being the hide behind your Ristic Study, hide behind your Bowmaster sort of meta, is not super kind to Najeela. I think that if we were on a more mid-rangey build of it, I would be much more willing. I would have it much higher. But with the dominant build being this turbo Najeela list, I just don't think it is built to deal with these grinding matchups super well. So I have Najeela down here at number 9.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me. I have Najeela a lot higher. And definitely very curious to I think we can wait for like some of my side of the conversation until we get to it. Absolutely. But I think it's pretty fascinating. Yeah. I do think like a part of this for me is this potential we have. Obviously, like this is a reflection of last month, right? Mm-hmm. But like also the deck did well last month, so I don't know. I'm pretty curious to hear that you have it so low, especially because I know you tend to be an Najeela stand, and I tend to be a kind of a hater on
it. Like I said, I think it should be higher if the dominant build of it was the more mid-rangey version of it. But the current build of it, I don't feel like long-term is going to continue to perform at this level.
I like the way you're saying that, specifically because, like, yes, the current iteration of NBC Najeela is, like, definitely one that was meant to attack the metagame a year ago, right? Every single Najeela pilot I have coached in the past 3 months, and especially in the past month or two, has been like, yeah, I feel like playing it this way that like has been the established way is just not. And like, these are people who are like getting coached by Najeela pilots too, right? Like, so it's not just like they're pulling it out of their butt. They're like, they're like, yeah, like this way of doing it is like just not working for me pretty consistently. And then like we talk about like pivoting to a mid-range line, and I'm getting DMs like, yeah, it's much cleaner now. Like I'm able to grind in the current metagame and stuff like that. So I think like it's one of those lists that have sort of stagnated when the metagame is changing moment to moment, right? Like every single day. And I think like, you know, if you're going to play something from a year ago, you're going to get results from a year ago, which, hey, that was a different reality, right? Like, so we gotta live much more in these, like, you know, I can see someone taking a list from 3 months ago and doing well with it, but not a list from a year ago, you know? And that's what it feels like with Najeela. Well,
and my thing with Najeela is, I kind of hinted at this last week, but the kind of the whole issue I have overall is we kind of have these, like, we have the like commanders in the command zone that are outlets. We have commanders in the command zone that are like draw engines, or we have commanders in the command zone that are like
win cons
or combo pieces. If you choose that last one, you need to make up for the lack of the other ones. And that is something that the NBC version of Najeela does not do. And that is the reason, like, okay, oh, but we play Rhystic Study. That is not just a Rhystic Study. You can't put all your eggs in Rhystic Study resolving in order for me to be in this game if it goes wrong. You need to be able to play grindy games because that is the reality of what this meta is right now. So I think if it pivots to play, wow, my voice cracked so bad right there. But if it pivots to play more of a mid-rangey strategy, is a little bit closer to maybe like a tempo style deck, I think that that is going to benefit it in this current meta game, the way it looks right now.
And I think people can take what we're saying here and sort of exaggerate it in the other direction, where they're like, oh, well, we're trying to stacks it up. And it's like, no. That's not it's not the direction we're talking about. I'm talking about like having engines that you know will resolve in the current meta game that allow you to start using Najeela as the broken five color engine that it is, right? Like, the card is really powerful. Like, it's one of the most powerful commanders ever printed. That's not in debate here, right?
No, so not at all. I'm not saying go put winner orb in this thing at all. I'm simply just being like, hey, maybe you should be on like a Talion, maybe you should be on, you know, something that can draw some more cards, maybe you should think about adding in like a bigger top end piece, right
like, and like we even saw from like Memo did this like deep run on Twitter about like he was in it and like kind of that like insular Rog'Sai meta and like made like an anti Rog'Sai Najeela list, and like I think won the whole, it was like a small tournament, but he won the whole thing with it, right? And I think it was like 30-40 people, right? So definitely like the equivalent of a local game store tournament online, right? But like it's still like you saw a metagame, you attacked the metagame, and it succeeded, right? And it's like, I think like a lot of the jokes was like, oh, these are all the bad cards I tell people never to play. And it's like, okay, well, maybe it's actually like a reason it did well, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah, to me, that conversation was very interesting. It's like, yeah. Why you're looking at a successful formula and then laughing at the result. And it's like, or we could analyze the result and use it, right? Like, yeah, I'm supposed to be like, ah, I got him. Good meme.
I don't know. I have an Agile at 9. I want to put it higher, but right now I don't think it's built for this metagame. Number 8 for you, Ian.
I have Rog'Sai down here at number 8, which is, I think, the lowest I've had Rog'Sai in a really long time.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because it does. Well, that's so weird. So on smaller tournaments, it has a really high conversion, but when I put it on the bigger tournaments, I felt like it had a worse one.
I mean, the conversion rate that I have for it is 23%.
Okay, yeah. Actually, so I think another deck popped up. Okay, yeah, Rog'Sai at 27% for the 64 and up tournaments. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not great for the list. I don't think that's like, that's pretty low for a deck that's like kind of known for being like a good converter in a bad top 16 deck, right? And so, like, if it's not even making those conversions, I'm very, like, anxious to play that deck, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think one of the conceits of Rog'Sai is that you go under everybody, right? But if everyone's got, like, a Rhystic Study or they're mulling for those turn one Mystics and Rhystics, then, like, the deck looks a lot worse, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, there's definitely going to be an ebb and flow to it, right? Like, I think at some point, like, we're going to see, like, the Dehada-style decks come back, right? Because everybody's trying to mid-range. I mean, that's literally what I did to people this weekend with the Tali, right? Which is like people like, and I don't think like the I don't want to say like the engines were so locked up and locked down in those mm-hmm. games, right? But like people were definitely not ready for me to like start storming off as early as turn two, right? And like that caught people off guard. And also it doesn't help that like, or it doesn't hurt that Itali's card types are harder to hit than something like a Rog'Sai too, right? But like there will be an ebb and flow to it. But mm-hmm. as of right now, because Rog'Sai's, you know, cards are easier to hit on the stack, I think you're just seeing a lot of people prepared for it, right? And people are playing more weird interaction than they've ever played before, yeah. right? People are playing spell snares and spell pierces and miscasts, and they're playing trick binds. And like, yeah, these cards might not be like the most efficient pieces, right? But they're hitting pieces of Rog'Sai that the deck's used to not being able to lose on. And also the uptick in Angel's Grace can't be helping that deck at all, yeah. right?
Like Angel's Grace really hits that one.
That is a bad, bad card for Rog'Sai. Yeah. Like the amount of Final Fortune turns I've seen from Rog'Sai compared to any other WinCon is huge.
Yep. Yeah, Rog'Sai is it's interesting how that has happened. I don't have Rog'Sai here at 8. I actually have Rog'Sai slightly higher than you. But
that's got to be historic.
That is a first, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always rated that deck much higher than you.
Yeah. Number 8 is where I have Atraxa. This is where I have Atraxa right here. Just like my back 5, I feel are all pretty close to each other. And my top 5, I feel like there's just like 2 buckets or 3 buckets really. There's like the top 2, and then there's like the middle 3, and then everything else is how it feels to me. And you know, I have Atraxa here at 8. I feel like Atraxa is had a bad month. I've had Atraxa higher, but I also feel like Atraxa just kind of is one of those decks, man, that just kind of keeps like itself in games somehow and does just enough sometimes and is built for this current metagame. Now, I do also think that it had a bad month, so I don't have it super high, and I think that it is like the opposite problem of Nigella right now, if that makes sense, where it was just like, it's tooled very well for the meta, but it just didn't do well. And I think some of that is, like you were saying when you talked about it at 10, is it's so fucking big. And I think that really is a big hurt to the deck. But I do think if you kind of know how to play the deck, and if you play it like patiently and you like are smart with the cards, it will do well. Mm-hmm. I've seen, like, I have played against some of the like hardest Atraxa pilots around mm-hmm. at like those SCG events, right, where they just are like good Atraxa mm-hmm. pilots and know what they're doing, and it's like those are tough fucking matches. Mm-hmm. And I've also played against bad Atraxa pilots who just don't know how the deck plays. And so it's just it's weird. But yeah, I have it here at 8. I think it's no hard feelings on it. No strong feelings. It's a good deck. This about like it's fine. that's how I feel sure. about it. Right.
Yeah.
Moving on up to 7, Ian, what's your number 7?
My number 7 is actually Bruce Thrass, which Bruce is Thrass. The first time I've had it on my top 10 in a really long time.
Yeah.
And it's not just my performance with it before people start getting their comments ready, right? Had a 30% conversion rate last month, right? I think I, you know, could be playing the deck more. I could be repping it more. I could be showing up and making top cut with it more. It feels really good right now. I think some updates needed to happen to the deck. They did happen. Mm-hmm. Feel good about it. I would love to believe that it will continue to have a pretty positive movement forward, right? But you never know with these things for sure. But yeah, we're seeing this version of the list do pretty well, and I'm gonna take those W's. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 12 tournament entries that made my over 50 over 10 like.
Yeah.
List, which is it's interesting. But yeah, I think that Brass Bruce is also pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it's a deck that shows up enough, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like I want to see it played more, if that makes
sense. Yeah, that's super fair.
So my number 7, this is where I have Rog'Sai.
Yeah.
I think Rog'Sai is super strong. I think I don't know how what else to say about Rog'Sai that I haven't said. The deck is what it is. It's good. It's fast. If you want to make a top 16, generally speaking, it's a good deck to get a top 16 with. I think right now, for some reason, didn't have a great January. But also, I still think that if you know what you're doing on this deck, you're going to do really well. But if you aren't comfortable like knowing how to sequence, knowing when to time things out, you're going to struggle in this metagame. And that is a huge thing to remember. So I have Rog'Sai here at number 7, mostly because of that. Like, I think it's hard to beat a Grixis pile, really. You know what I mean? Like, it can only be so bad. But number 6, Ian, what do you have here at number 6?
I have our favorite Sphinx, Tivit. I just have it 6 because Tivit's been doing well. I mean, I feel like my Tivit sort of bounces around way more than yours does. Mm-hmm. I feel very comfortable with Tivit at 6. Like, the deck's doing okay. The problems that I think exist with it still exist. I think that's got a lot of new tools recently, some of which I'm very, very excited about. And like Final Word Phantom, I think it's gonna be really good for the deck. I haven't really played it since the Invitational, which I mean, definitely, don't get me wrong, left a pretty bad taste in my mouth, but I definitely think Tivit is a very strong list still in general. Like, one card combos are great, right? But like, I think until people stop treating Tivit like as soon as the commander resolves, the game is over, and recognize that it is like a worse card advantage engine than Timna and Krom, right? Then I think it's gonna continue to just be doing okay, right? There are gonna be good pilots who do well with it, but the feelings about the deck are, I think, holding it back a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. I can't really argue with that at all. I've somebody who plays a lot of Tivit.
Yeah.
You know, my number 6, this is where I have Tevish Krom. I think the separation between Tevish Krom and Rog'Sai is like inches, not feet, if that makes sense. I think that they are very much like, I mean, like, obviously they're very different decks, but I think it's like the Grixis only stuff. Like, I think is, again, it's number 6 here, right? Like, there's thousands of decks out there, and I have, you know, Tevish Krom here. I think it's very good. I think it has this issue where people see Grixis and their brains turn off, and they're just like, oh, this fast deck, gotta go fast, ook ook. And then they forget how to play interaction, and they forget how to protect things, and they forget how to do things, and then they just have a bad Rog side deck.
Yeah.
I think when people are playing it correctly, it's exceptionally good and very well positioned, and does very well into a mid-rangey metagame. So that's why I have it at 6. I think it's a little bit better than Rog'Sai. I think the way people, some people are playing it is a little sus, but that's, you know, nothing I haven't said about like Timnacrom, right? Yeah. But I mean, like its conversion percentage for the month was 14%. Like it was, it was not great. But I just, again, feel like in this current metagame with the mid-range hell stuff, if you play it mid-rangey, it's going to treat you well. So
yeah, I think that's been a big problem with this list in general. Like, I know a lot of people picked it up after like my run with it, and we talked about it a lot last year. I just feel like when I talk to people about it, like, there's just like a lot of lines that aren't obvious to people, right? And I think you comparing it to Rog'Sai, I think, is a bit of like exemplary of kind of part of the problem with the deck is that people see it as a Grixis pile, and it's like, when I play that deck, like, there's a reason I'm running things like Counterbalance in the deck, right? And it's like, I get if Counterbalance is not your cup of tea, right? But like, I am very intentionally playing the deck in a very slow way, right? And if you're not prepared to sit there and eke out every inch of value and drain your opponents of their blood, like, then there's no point in like jamming this list as opposed to something like Rog'Sai, right? Yes.
But, and like, that's exactly what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Is it's like, if you if you play it the way like you play it and some of the other Tevish Krom players who are doing really well play it, it's so good.
Right.
If you play it as like a turbo Grixis pile with advantage engines in the command zone, it's going to give you a really bad experience.
Well, something here's the thing, Ron. Right. If we're in a mid-range meta, I would call the deck stacking the odds in my favor, right? Because I am starting with two insane card advantage engines in the command zone, meaning all I need is mana to be able to play the same game everyone is aspiring to, right? You don't have to mulligan for Rhystic Study, you have to mulligan for fucking Mana Vault. And you have your card advantage on turn two.
Yep.
That's how I play the deck, right? That's how people, I think, in the current metagame should be trying to play the deck. From many discussions I've had with people, that's not how they're playing the deck. And, you know, I'm not saying the way I play is the end all be all, but I'm saying, like, there's a formula. I think it's been successful.
And not just like you have done that, right? Like, other people have played it that way and had success with it. But again, that's why I have it at 6. I think it's better than Rog'Sai. But I also think some people are kind of playing it wrong, so that's why I have it here.
This is and this is part of my soapbox, because I have the deck much higher, because when I've played it, it's felt much higher, right?
Yeah.
Than it performed last month. So I'm biased, right? A little bit.
Well, I mean, I'm also like, listen, we gotta have our biases, right? Like I tend to have Tivit higher than you have Tivit, right?
Of course.
So that's my number.
But if I don't recognize those biases, then I lose validity.
Number 5. What do you have here, Ian?
This is where I have Najeela. I think Najeela is very strong. I think, I mean, her conversion rate last month was crazy, right? Like, I'm not, I mean, so in 64 plus tournaments, I think, what do we have her at? Let's see here. Sorry. I jumped around to see, because I saw Path of the Pantheon, or not, the Pantheon series wasn't showing up, and I was like, wait, why is Pantheon not showing up? And I was like, because it didn't even make 64 players. But Najeela, I mean, 64 and up, 36% conversion rate, right? Like, that is, those are very real numbers. That is better than Timnacrom did last month, right? Like, so, that being said, I want to believe that there's something very, very good happening there with this deck, and I think it's very powerful. I think it has the potential to be on an uptick. It just got Kutzil, so, like, there's only so bad it can be in certain things. I love that the winning list with this deck played Druid Repository, because I think that's a recognition of things that are happening in the metagame, and a reflection of the things that we've been talking about, where it's like, yeah, you got to adapt, right? It still feels like an MVC version of the deck, right? But it's making choices that feel good in the current meta. So I like all of that stuff. I think that there is a potential for Najeela to continue to do well. And I hope that it does that.
just to expand on why I have Najeela lower. And I think this is like some important context is we talked about the conversion rate, right? If you look across all of them, 50 and up, it's 32%, which is on par with what Tim Nacrom is doing. Here's where I split it off, right? Is you now look at this, how does it do at getting to a top four? Oh, it only has one top four. So 4% conversion rate there versus 13% for Tim Nacrom. And then, or 11% for Kinnon, or 11% for Tivitt, or 9% for Kinnon or Kenrith.
No, and those numbers are huge, right? Yeah. I completely agree.
So that's where I, because in the reason I'm doing that is I think it would be like for me, because of like the way I have in the past established like how I kind of rank things, especially with Rog'Sai, right? Is I penalized Rog'Sai for worse stat or for better stats than that, right? And so for me, I felt like I was just like, okay, top 16. No, and
I think top four conversions are a number we should be looking at more often, to be honest. I think I don't even like have that available technically right now, but like I think that is a really fascinating information, and I think that can sort of show a lot, especially if you see decks on a larger scale, right? If it happens like for a deck that's been played like five or six times, you don't really learn a lot, right?
But learn
in a deck like the farm or Kinnon, which are, you know, for a fact being overrepresented always, if those are converting to like 10% to top four, is like, that's not bad. Well, right?
And if that's part of why I have Tivitt higher is Tivitt, the only decks in the current metagame that have over a 10% top four conversion are Timna, Kinnon, or Timna Krom, Kinnon, and Tivitt. Those are the only three. Everything else is at least an eight or down.
That's fascinating.
Tivitt, Kinnon, and Timna Krom all are. Tivitt has a slightly better than Kinnon, which is 11.5%. So it's like barely better. Kinnon's exactly 11%, and Timna Krom is 13.5%, which is, especially when you consider how much play they get, is huge.
Yeah, so I agree.
But that was, I just wanted to say that here because, you know, you brought up the conversion percentage, and I do think it's important on the conversion percentage to like contextualize it a little bit, because I don't think EDH top 16 does a good job of contextualizing it.
I think there's a lot of numbers, and I think it's an amazing resource.
I
think that they're like for what we do, where we are hyper focusing on like aspects of this format, I think it's really good to have additional numbers on top of that. I would be very, very interested to see if that could be integrated into the website, is to have a top 16 and top four conversion thing put on there. Cause I feel like that would be, honestly, super illustrative of like things that are doing well in the meta. So like,
on the stat sheet that I sent you on the monthly one that I do, breakdown specifically because of that.
So no, that's fascinating. I definitely want to like hit up Zane about that, cause I feel like that would be, or any of the team. Zane's probably the one of the best, but I think that'd be really, really cool to have that information available, because I think that like that can really help to shape how we understand what's happening. And once again, we're looking at it on a mass scale, like with all this information, context is so important, right? So I think that's worth noting too.
My number five is Sisse Weatherlight Captain. This is where I have Sisse. Sisse had a kind of rough month. Overall had a 25% win percentage, or 26% win percentage for the month, which is like fine. It's like right around what it should be. Had a 15% top 16 conversion rate, which is kind of below where it usually performs. It actually usually is over 20. So it usually does a lot better, but it did not make a top four, and it did not make a turn, and did not win a turn. Which is pretty noticeable for Sisse. And so Sisse moves down for me a little bit. I still think the deck is insane. Like, I still love it, and I've played against it a bunch recently, and I have massive respect for that deck.
Look, I mean, hey, I knocked out two Sisse pilots from the Boil top 16, you know what I mean? So like, I don't know. I have nothing but respect from those players. I know there was straight up like, there was two people on the Clam Chowder variant who were, one was a draw out from top 16 in the Boil, one made it to top 16 in the Boil, and then there was a double elimination where both the Sisse's had to play each other, and they lost to me, right? So like, I don't know, like, I think that bit of context helps a lot, right? Because those are two pilots who I know are straight up killers. I know Malcolm just top 16 last weekend with the SCG as well with Sisse, so like, I don't know. I think the deck is still doing very, very well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still have it at number five, right?
Like, yeah.
I'm not saying it's doing poorly. I moved it from four to five, right? Like, it's not.
I think, a lot of the known CISA pilots like myself and many, many others and people who are known for it more even so than I am are having a lot of really in-depth conversations about like how to adapt the deck to the current metagame. And I've been talking with Malcolm a lot about that whenever we're in person at events.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating. Like, I think, once again, the Clam Chowder variant's an interesting interpretation. I don't know it's the end-all be-all, right? But it's at least innovation with the archetype, or even like the Lotus Petal variant that won. And by Lotus Petal, I mean Lotus Petal Breach variant that won the Mox Masters back in December, right? So like, there's a lot of fascinating stuff with CISA. I feel like there's so much room to explore because it can be a good stuff deck, it can be a soup deck, it can be a full synergy deck, right? There's so much potential with this list. It can be the equivalent of a Kenrith list, right?
It's an extremely versatile list. Which is why completely I like it so much.
So I think it's fascinating on that aspect. I feel like there's definitely a decent amount of just the deck needs to see more play and continue what it's doing, and people need to keep pushing it. And they're going to keep finding fascinating stuff about it. And I think I'm really excited to see what happens next in the world of CISA. I know, like, I straight up, like, I can't do tournaments 2 weeks in a row. And I'm like, oh, man, there's so many things in CISA I'd want to be trying right now. So, I love the deck. I think it's very strong. And that's why it's my number four, which is also why I'm sort of taking the time to talk about it in great detail, because it's my next one. I think CISA is still very strong. I think it's still one of the top contenders in the format that you can expect to start seeing at every table. Right.
100%.
At least in every tournament, I should say. And it's going to continue doing well because it's so flexible, right? Yep. Like, Winota doing really well is like, oh, hey, it's an S tier deck, but let's clown on it, right?
Yep.
This has got five colors. CISA can pivot. Like, you can do ad nos CISA if you're really that crazy, right? Like, it's not restricted. It is a deck that has so much potential. And I think that's the good part about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I still love CISA a lot.
Yeah.
My number four, though, is another five color deck. This is where I have Kenrith, the Return King.
Okay.
Kenrith has been doing really well recently. Won a tournament in the last month. Had had actually around the same type of top 16 conversion rate as to say.
Yeah.
The difference was had a 9% top 4 percentage and then won a tournament. And that to me is like a pretty big stat. When you can make that happen, I like seeing that number there. Overall, I think that Kenrith is like, again, we've talked about this before, it's five color soup. And when you build it with like a good intention and like build around what the commander does really well, you get a lot of good stuff out of it. And it's...
Yeah, that's really interesting. If you go up to 64, Kenrith is doing... atrocious.
Interesting.
Yeah, it has a 4% conversion rate on tournament 64 and up.
Well, good to know.
So that's interesting. So four of those tournaments, I believe, it's literally like, the difference between those tournaments is actually insanely huge. So I don't know. I tend to be pretty hard on the 64 plus qualifier for tournaments. I know in like some levels it's pretty abstract, but it dropping down to 4% is pretty huge indicator for me that I don't want it anywhere near my top 10 for this month.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
This is where I had it. I still think you got to respect it. And I think that it's pretty good.
Yeah, you got to respect it for sure.
And so we'll see. Maybe this is one of my whiffs for the month. And that's okay. what do you have here at number three?
At number three, I have Tevesh Krom. Despite the monthly results, I still think it's like comparable to Blue Farm, right? Like any deck that I think is comparable to a deck that is considered objectively like an S tier list, then like I don't know how you put it anywhere near the lower parts of this top 10. I think Tevesh Krom is very, very strong, very solid. I don't think it really lost a ton. I think we're just seeing the Blue Farm syndrome that we saw when Blue Farm first came out, where people are picking it up and they're just not comfortable. And I think, there are benefits of obviously going to Blue Farm. There are benefits of playing Tev Krom. And you'll see the differences between those and those pilots, right? But I think in general, Tev Krom is going to be doing well pretty consistently and give it to a pilot who knows like very confidently what they're doing, and it will treat you like a blue farm deck.
Yeah.
I just once again think it's there's a learning curve on the deck that I think people are missing right now.
Yeah, that's fair. That's kind of how I feel about Tivit here at number three. Like, yeah, that's I feel very similarly. Tivit is very much a blue farm esque deck. Mm-hmm, and it is best played when you just kind of sit on your commander. And this is one of the things we were talking about Najeela earlier, right? Where Najeela kind of needs to change and play more advantage engine sort of stuff. That's kind of how I felt about and still feel about Tivit, is I think Tivit needs to, I think, honestly, the addition of Hullbreaker Horror, man, that just changes the deck so much. You have like so many new lines available just from that addition alone.
Agreed.
But overall, feel really good about the deck. I like Angel's Grace in it. Get Lost was an amazing pickup for the list.
Yes, I can't agree more.
So many problems. And Dauntless Dismantler feels good. I stand by. I think Shieldred still doing a lot of work to make Tivit math a lot better. Listen, I win more games off of either Windfall with a Bowmasters or Windfall with a Shieldred out than I do with actual Tivit. So, like, it's...
I'm willing to believe you.
Like, I do. The deck is really good at being an Esper midrange deck, and I love it to death. I think it is right where I want it to be, right here at three. And like I said earlier, like Tivit has a pretty good top four percentage. It didn't win a tournament in January, but so did a bunch of decks. So did Sisse didn't win a tournament. Tevish Kron didn't win a Najeela didn't win a tournament, right? Like there's only a handful of decks that can win these things. And so that's a huge indictment. But I think the top four percentage is the one that really sticks out to me as being that much better than the rest of the crowd is substantial.
Right. I agree with you.
Number two, Ian, is this Tim Nekrom time or is this Kinnan time?
It's Tim Nekrom time. Yeah, before I thought. Yeah, I mean, we do this song and dance all the time, right? It's you could switch either of these two, and I'd be like, "What? No, I'm so surprised." But I mean, you talked about the top four conversions, right?
The top four percentage, man, on these three decks is just nuts.
The nuance in my decision making and the 0.05% that I feel like I like Kinnan more is that I feel like Kinnan can pivot in a ways that other people are not ready for. More easily, right?
I also think there's an element of your play style too that like just skews towards the way Kinnan plays versus the way Tim Nekrom plays.
That's and I'm very willing to admit that that feels strong. I've also played Tim Nekrom once in a tournament, right?
Yeah,
and don't get me wrong, it did me well.
You won a time twister.
sure, right? So like, I'm not scoffing at that. Yeah, but
at it, putting it at two.
Yeah, I know, right? It's more my experience playing with and against these lists a lot, right? Because as I mentioned, they're very heavily represented. You know, you call two decks the top two decks in the format for a long time, turns out people are going to sleeve them up.
Yep.
Having played against them a lot, I feel like there are times that Kinnan feels like it runs away in the game that is so insurmountable that it takes a very clever blue farm pilot to be able to get around those things. Mm-hmm. Whereas sometimes Kinnan, despite being played by clever pilots, still just has the ability to go over the top in ways that blue farm really has to play some real mental gymnastics to get around.
Yeah, that's fair.
On the other hand, you get Dockside, you get high card quality, you get Underworld Breach, right? You get the ability to just, boom, go off whenever you need to be, right? You get to play just good cards. You have Thoracle Consul,
right? Sometimes you just cheese wins on turn two, right?
Yeah, like, sometimes you cheese them real good, right? But like that is, most of the time I am looking at Kinnan just that once again little percentage more. Fair. And I think you did point out the very valid fact there that I as a player will always be inclined to go for a creature combo deck over something like Blue Farm, right? Because it's just harder to interact with.
Yeah. And then then you have me where it's like you and I play very similarly, but we skew slightly differently.
Yes, this is the Tivit to Kinnan difference is like the super descriptive of our play style.
It really is. And Tim Nekrom is very much more my play style, and it makes a lot of sense why I have it up there. The other reason why I have it up there is it's just the amount of the, it's not that it is statistically the best deck. It is statistically the best deck by like a lot. And that's kind of the like the point for me is it's like, okay, so the top 16 conversion percentage, 33%. Kinnan's 18%. Then they start to look very similar once you get past that, right? Their top four percentage is 13 for Timnachrom, 11 for Kinnan. Tournament win, 4% for Blue Farm, 4% for Kinnan. They start to look real similar, but it's that difference of playing in the Swiss and playing in the top 16 that I think sets them apart. Is I think in the Swiss, Timnachrom gives you an upper hand in a way that, because realistically, most of these like top decks that we're talking about, once you get to a top table, if you're a competent pilot and you're confident in your ability, you can pilot any of these to a win. The where it comes down is how does it get the average player from point A to point B? And Timnachrom does that so well consistently. And that is just, I have a hard time not putting it at one when just the numbers are just so heavy in its favor. So,
I think that's insanely fair. Like it is hard for me to really like rank these two decks because they're both.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you.
Right. Like it is, they're both insanely good decks. I feel like you're right in the sense that like Blue Farm does get more free wins. Right. Like I think you can definitely like idiot proof Blue Farm a lot easier than you can idiot proof Kinnan, right? And that's a general expression. I'm not calling anyone an idiot, to be clear.
No, I'm calling you an idiot though.
But
yeah, no, okay, cool.
But yeah, no, I mean they're both insane, right? They're both the S tier of the format. Yeah, I think there's a 100%. Couple of decks that are like inching closer by the day, right? But these decks are exceptional and they will continue to be exceptional, I think, for a long time.
Well, That's it for January. That's our top 10. And those are our power rankings. And honestly, Ian, I like doing this so much. And it's fun that I'm really excited that we get to have a full year of doing these instead of like, I think last year we started at like May or something like that.
Something like that.
I'm very excited about the fact that we are going to get 12 of these bad boys and we're going to get to see exactly what this looks like. So that is super fun. Ian, for the folks at home who don't know, where can they find you? What do you do? And how can you help them get better at the game of CEDH?
Hi, everybody. My name is Ian. My other channel is youtube.com/comedianMTG, where you can find the largest tournament CEDH channel over on YouTube for all CEDH tournament specific content. I have one of the most wins with diverse decks 2 years running. So, you know,
you make that like name as hard as it possibly can every single time.
I don't want to, you know, there's other things that can be more easily debated. Right. I think I'm pretty close to the most, you know, high performances of a couple years in a row. But like specifically with different decks, there's no one really even close, so that one I can staple to my chest pretty easily.
Tiger Woods of CEDH, everybody.
Oh my god, all right, I don't like those majors, okay. Okay. Of all people to compare me to, Tiger Woods, really?
Okay, excuse me, you're the Jack Nicholson of Jesus CEDH Christ. Is that better?
Anyway, yeah.
You feel better about that one?
No. You can find me over youtube.com/comedianmtg. I also do CEDH coaching as my full-time thing. So if you're interested in that, feel free to reach out to me. Cal is so lovely and puts those in the descriptions of both my videos and the videos here on the Mind Sculptors. So you can find me on email, comedianmtg. You can find me on Twitter at comedianmtg and comedian_mtg over on Discord. Any of those places, if you're interested in coaching, a lot of people do pretty well with my coaching. Actually, one of my recipients just topped forward last weekend, so pretty cool stuff. I love what I do, and I kind of know what I'm talking about, so if you're interested in that, you should come check it out.
Be pretty good. I can confirm that Ian is pretty good at it. Maybe we should call you the Arnold Palmer of CEDH. How do you feel about Arnold Palmer?
I don't know what IT has to do with anything.
He was a golfer. He was a really good golfer.
I know, that's
a
joke.
I'm making a comparison. Yeah, but you made a joke, and so I'm now just being joking back. And that's your fault on that one. So, if you like this show and want to continue to see more episodes like it, please go ahead and go down into the description below, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and leave a comment about what you think about this episode. And also, if you want to support us, please be sure to you can either do that TCG player link down there and order your cards using that link, or you can support us directly on Patreon, which was greatly appreciated. It helps me make this my full-time job. Ian gets to coach people for his full-time job. Mine is running the show, hosting the show, and editing people's content. And I'm glad that I'm blessed enough to be able to do that. So if you want to help me continue to do that, please head over to Patreon. So with that, Ian, would you believe it if I told you that an Urabrask deck top 16'd an event over the week?
I would be surprised. Which one?
There's an Urabrask deck at the Top Deckers event that the new one, the flip new one. Event,
Urabrask?
Yeah. No. The one from
Storm Urabrask. Storm one, okay.
Made a top 16 at the, I don't know how it did past that, but it was undefeated in the Swiss. So go check out the Top Deckers results if you want to see that deck list. He bodied both me and Rog'Sai in the Swiss. We played this guy in the Swiss and he just bodied us. It was nuts. But with that being said, go check out the Top Deckers. They're great people. We love Bailey. We love Nick. They're awesome. And with that being said, I'm Callahan. That's Ian.
And I'm Ian.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.